text about what critical thinking is and why it's important for anarchists in particular. The text makes some declarations that seem silly in the face of the know-nothing revolution that is attempting to happen in the U.S. right now. For example, quote, knowledge is power and power begins with knowledge, unquote. And also, quote, anarchism demands more thinking in order to work, unquote. Which goes against the idea popularized most by CrimeThink that people are frequently unthinkingly anarchist in their thinking and or behavior. Obviously, critical thinking only gets more important in these days of large language models, knowledge by algorithm, bots, and other fiascos. But this text connects critical thinking to anarchist thought in a way that seems to prioritize grad school. Always good to be reminded of rhetorical devices to not be suckered by, though.
Nepali anarchists on the toppling of the government from CrimeThink. CrimeThink asks CrimeThink-esque questions of an anarchist project in Nepal in the context of intense resistance to government violence and corruption, resistance that saw people killed by live rounds from the police. CrimeThink frames the situation as the one we're all fairly familiar with, that of the post-overthrow power struggle between people who want to be the state and people who want no state. Quote, it remains uncertain which groups will ultimately benefit from the toppling of the government, but no political decision in Nepal is made without the involvement of the Indian Intelligence Agency, RA, the CIA, also likely plays a role consistent with its history in global revolutions. Major dangers include royalist factions potentially gaining power with Indian backing, driven by extremist Hindu nationalist politics, and the resurgence of old political elites without substantive change. While a military coup was a real threat, thankfully it did not occur. Unquote. Good luck to the people in Nepal, Gaza, and Indonesia, and in Sudan, and you know, fuck, all of us everywhere. Fuck.
New PDF and magazine, 325, number 13, Back to Basics, 2025. There's lots of numbers in that. From Dark Knights, quote, originally released in March 2025, the PDF online version of 325 number 13 is out now. 76 pages of anarchist, anti-capitalist, and anti-civilization writings, coverage, and news. Continues the focus on high technologies whilst providing space for critical anti-state perspectives and a restatement of principles. DIY print and distribution. For the next generation of international struggle. Unquote. Table of contents is provided.
New zine, Avulsion, We Will Tear Us Apart, from fuckhope.noblogs.org. The latest from nihilist indigenous anarchist website Fuck Hope. This is the full text of a PDF pamphlet that describes and promotes these values, especially the author's understanding of nihilism. Quote, what I don't respect are the people, the academics, politicians, movement moralists, who misrepresent nihilism on purpose. They use it like a slur. They don't understand it. And worse, they don't want to. Because to them, questioning everything means destabilizing the thing they've already chosen to believe in. The vote, the cause, the revolution, the community, the party line. Liberals call it defeatism, the reason people don't vote or engage, like the world is going to hell because some of us won't pick the lesser evil. Conservatives treat it like rot, proof society has lost its faith, its family, its flag. Fascists love to wear nihilism like a mask. They twist it into permission. Nothing matters, so dominate, be cruel, unquote. A touching text and also useful for anyone picking their way through the various ways people, including anarchists, use these words. That was Avulsion.
Audio and video. William Gillis on radical versus liberal abolitionism. From Seeds of Revolution podcast via YouTube. 90 fucking minutes of Gillis pontificating about himself and things he hasn't thought about very well. One example out of so many, the definition of violence that Gillis engages, where he both tries to be broad about what violence is, but then has an inconsistent and merely physical definition in his own example. Yes, probably younger, quote-unquote, spryer people will get up to more things involving agility, but older people can and do get up to things that require more specialized knowledge and experience and or broader networks. All I'm saying is that his thinking is fuzzy and he should feel bad. Or at least he should feel more hesitant about doing 90-minute interviews.
War at Ground Level, a discussion about experiencing the war in Ukraine from It's Going Down, an hour and 9 minutes. An interview with a Ukrainian anarchist who speaks about his experience in the war and has already done an interview with The Final Straw. The interviewee seems solid, whether one agrees with him or not, and I admit that I did not listen all the way through, because when I heard him, he was speaking from his own experience, and it didn't seem like the host was going to ask him about anything controversial, much less the idea that the group he's a part of has paid for military equipment for the state. The framing by the hosts from IGD is embarrassingly shallow, partly along the lines of, "Tell our listeners what it's like to have a difficult emotional experience," but even more along the lines of, whatever anarchists need to do to survive is anarchist. Which is... I already said embarrassing, didn't I? Okay, listen to this if you absolutely must hear whatever new has happened to this person since the Final Straw interview that was like a month ago or so.
There is a discussion of the week, and you're fucking listening to it, motherfucker.
I was so waiting
for the topic of the week.
Yes, no. You always read the topic of the week.
Oh right, you can start now, but well, next time I guess, because there isn't a topic of the week, but it's Vale and Larkspur. What's good, everyone? We're settling in for a cozy autumn, a nice cozy fall. We've got a pot on the stove in each of our respective homes that is just, what is that shit that you like put in? And it's like...
Cinepots.
Cinepots.
No, those are the guys from Hellraiser.
No.
No,
yeah, I'm the chattering cinepot.
You put nice things that smell like cinnamon and cloves and an orange and
lemon
you
peel.
Boil it on the yep. stove. Lemon peel. It mm-hmm. smells nice.
It smells nice. We're hanging out in the anarchist pumpkin patch. Picking out our gourds and making some baked apples and fucking talking about seasons and seasonality and generally the passage of time and how we kind of think about it and experience it as people in like the anarchist space and stuff. I thought it'd be really funny to have like what if there was just an anarchist like against like seasons and it's like, oh, they're going to assassinate the CEO of Home Goods and all the bullets have like shit written in like calligraphy like gather.
I'm actually currently etching live love, life, and like dude, those little...
bro, it's live, laugh, love. Come on.
I know it's live, laugh, love, but I got them confused with those like sort of signs that say like eat, and you put them in the kitchen.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm going to be... No.
Those are the best.
When engraved onto one's rounds.
Sure. Yeah. I'm getting my wig split by 30-06 bullet. Just says fucking like hearth. Damn.
Okay. Well. We talked about this a little before the show, whether like cyclicality, both in terms of there are, for now, in most parts of the world, some sort of stable seasons, although that could be changing.
Yeah,
But also
we live in a place with seasons here, but
And like we were talking about the extent to which interest in actions and the sort of like way people quote organize, or even the way they like shape like their politics or whatever, is sort of how much of that is dictated by seasonality. Is there a shift towards like a cozier activities in the fall and winter? Is there a shift towards this like idea of things are escalating and becoming more intense during the summer?
Yeah, is there a feeling of like doldrum and disengagement and atomization in the winter? And I don't know. I'm like kind of two minds about it. I think I itch at the idea of like things like protest season being like, oh, it's going to be like this hot summer and we're going to be like, you know, fucking shit up because it's like nice out. We all want to be like, I feel like that was like something. I'm sure it predates that. Like, I'm sure it predates 2020. I've been around longer than that. But, like, I would say, like, most of the mass action stuff I remember personally turning out for were, like, not necessarily so tied to summer as, like, a temporal thing. I remember being outside in, like, pretty shitty, cold, rainy conditions quite a lot. Especially in the city where I lived. Back, you know, even, like, five or so years before like 2020 and stuff, like but I feel like that like kind of moment of like summer really became like this like hot thing, and I'm sure that's gone on for quite some time, like this kind of like, you know, idea that like the heat is causing like this amount of tension and stuff, that, you know, that's a pretty common trope and probably pretty factual, obviously. But it just feels like it kind of also is like, it becomes almost like this like summer campy activity for people when you look at activism that way, like that it's like, oh, it's summer, like you can like fall in love on the barricades at summer camp, and you can get like you're gonna be out with everyone like in the heat and like, you know, raising hell, and like it's summer and you can have your summer connection and like stuff like that. And I don't know if it's like, you know, maybe I'm being kind of cruel about it, but it feels like it's a big like convergence moment too, obviously, and like everyone wants to travel and be around in the summer and stuff and get a groovy hand job or whatever at like day camp or for anarchists at Deep Food. I got a groovy hand job at Deep Food. I did not go to Deep Food. I apologize. but yeah, I don't know. I don't like the, since 2020, I think it's like minted a bunch of anarchists who like, or not anarchists necessarily even, but like activists who see summer as like this big time to like push and push towards like mass in a lot of ways. And like people like mark that as like, oh, like, the, you know, they spent this, we spent this whole summer and we didn't accomplish anything, or like, you know, like this is all fizzling out now. And it's like, well, if you guys are like chaining it so heavily to like this moment of temporality and stuff, it's like you're intentionally setting these kind of limits. And if you are tying these moments of resistance or something and like space of struggle so heavily to like things like mass that prioritize, you know, fair weather conditions, like you're literally developing fair weather struggle in a lot of ways, and it leads to, you know, I think kind of an internalization of, like, you know, most of the year being a space of either, like, withdrawal from activity into, like, atomization or, you know, repression or whatever, as, like, the conditions change away from, like, the bliss of, like, you know, getting tugged around the chili pots or whatever.
I mean, I think part of that, like, maybe it's a little of romanticization of some of the more famous riots that occurred in the summer, but, like, the WTO protests in 99, that was, like, late November in Seattle.
Yeah.
That is not, like, that is a temperate climate, but it is not nice. It is, or, like, J20 was also, like, well, yeah, fucking mid-January in D.C. Fucking cold. But I'd rather be wearing all those little get-ups of, like, okay, I've got all my mask on, I'm gray-blocked, I'm whatever, I'm scorching in my little, like, legal observer hat or my medic badge, and I'm carrying around my 20-pound medic kit that's got all my eye washes in it. I'd rather do that shit in winter, where, like, it's actually more comfortable to be wearing multiple layers than in summer, where that is impractical.
Yeah.
It'd be cool
to wear, like, big puffer coats. like those puffer coat, like, fetish artists suit.
And in each of it is, like, my medic kit and my legal observer notebook and my, what else do we have here? What else? Oh, water bottles for, like, I don't know, whatever the various, like, protest architecture type of people carry. My change of clothes, my sunglasses, my
my 8 feet of fruit by the foot.
You never know when you would not need 8 feet of fruit by the foot.
Yeah, you can tie a pretty nasty tourniquet with 8 feet of fruit by the foot.
You can potentially wrap it around your wrist so you can slither out of zip ties. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that ties into probably student protest and student culture and all that, because fall is the fucking school year, so fall is when you start recruiting, and then you have your fall and winter terms where you're getting your little groups together and your poverty of student lifing it up, and then in the spring when everybody's, like, graduating and maybe doesn't have to worry about a student conduct board, or they're just feeling the urge to say fuck it, that's when that's when the protests happen, everybody's free, whatever. And that's about how I feel about that. I mean, the encampments 2 years ago was obviously, like, a interesting, like, that was a very temporal moment.
It was awesome. Spring, like, semester, literally. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean,
there were a lot of people who took the bait on, like, delaying divestment to fall semester, where the momentum was not there, and they got fucked for that.
Yeah, that sucks. But they also probably just wanted to fucking break camp and go home before they got tear gas or before it got too hot, because that brings me to the other thing about summer. These last two alleged, oh, it's going to be such a hot summer. Yeah, it was. It was literally hot and muggy, at least where I'm calling in from. And I think that, like, to an extent, de-radicalizes, well, that, like, what other thing? Not de-radicalizes. It filters for a certain type of person who will show up to a protest in 90-degree heat, and that is not necessarily the person who comes to, like, do whatever people are wanting from protest.
I mean, anarchist stuff in, you know, the global south and like stuff a little closer to the equator and stuff does pop off pretty hard, despite it being, you know, pretty fucking muggy. It's pretty humid out.
Yeah, and LA will pop off, sure, but I mean, I think entirely different, like, crews of people, different, like, ethos around, and all of that is just, and different goals, and not this semi, I don't want to say top down, but it feels like there's, like, it feels like a lot of this protest stuff is someone, like, poking, mob of like not a mob like a well reason a well behaved group of mostly liberal people who are there because they think you should do a street protest and being like do something. It's like, okay, but different entirely conditions elsewhere.
Yeah, different stakes, I would say too. I think it's,
yeah, I think that's the important part.
I mean, a lot of this stuff too, all is very heavily tied to like the efficacy and ability to mobilize people en masse, which I think, right. Like, I think if you're like so wedded to these cycles of organization and like the way that like, yeah, like the fall is like recruitment time and stuff. It's like time to like get people onto like into, matriculating into like these little like political education and stuff. It like so mirrors like the very like kind of school year-y kind of like academic pattern and stuff. And like, I mean, mm-hmm. Of course, like a lot of people, you know, they grow up their whole life kind of, you know, that being like the first half of most people's lives and stuff is like largely like characterized by that like division of time and stuff and like that cycle of time, that it's not a surprise that like people carry that off into like other aspects of their like kind of involvement in other things. But it also just feels like it weds it so heavily to the kind of like pace that the pace and like enthusiasm and energy that accompanies like, I don't know, any amount of like the academy and stuff. Mm-hmm. And
doesn't, well, feel... I'd say, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay, go ahead.
I'd say that it's probably entirely tied to the academic school year, because either explicitly or implicitly, it functions as a way of recruiting students. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is just me having spent a lot of like my working life, or actually just my life, in academic towns or college towns. Mm-hmm. But I think it is just like, okay, we have a fresh crop of freshmen. Let's see who we can like get to join our little group, or. Mm-hmm. Mobilize with us, or
lest anyone teach
to be like, fuck the school.
Yeah, lest anyone slur you as an academic anarchist or something. you are a woman in STEM who happens to be an anarchist. Writing something about Lacan and mutual aid or whatever the fuck. That's what these nerds are out here doing.
I think it's like Lacan and film and the psychoanalysis of like something or other. I think the sort of person who does a mutual aid thing is doing like an anthropology degree or sociology or something. And it's like mutual aid networks of care among communities in like, I don't know.
Right, yeah.
Somewhere right outside Boston in 1987 or something like extreme. You know what? I'm just like making fun of somebody's dissertation for no good reason. But yeah.
That's fine. Okay. We'll make fun of your dissertation later.
Okay, if I ever. fuck that guy's dissertation. Okay. But yeah, I think tying to any sort of cyclical thing or any abrupt perceived rupture, I mean, we talked about this when, after the, you know, the second Trump election, that idea of like something happens and people react. So there's this need to use that force of interest and that everybody going around going, oh my God, what do I fucking do, to pull in more people to your group or your project, or just to like radicalize them or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's fundamentally, I mean, there's nothing like wrong with that in terms of pulling people into your group or your project, but it's kind of reactive in a way that I wonder if we could do something more stable, more robust.
Yeah, anything that makes you feel like less of an ideological like salesperson, I think is probably good. Generally.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like there's just the history of like the kind of like space of like social movement struggle is so littered with the kind of like cycles and momentum of like recruitment into like pol-ed to like, you know, like kind of just slow like accrual of people and then attrition throughout the year, and like kind of this just like endless cycle that like more or less just like meets the equilibrium of attrition and really just is like self-perpetuating for like these kind of groups and stuff, and like building like projects that I think I am more interested in are things that like don't really kind of look as temporality or look as like cyclical like that, or like don't mm-hmm. prioritize the kind of like flow of attrition that like resembles such a yearly cycle and stuff. Like attrition is far more like, I don't know, far more sporadic or strange. Mm-hmm. Like it's usually a little more tied to like factors like, I don't know, like repression or conflict than it is to mm-hmm. the flow of people through like, I don't know, like higher learning institutions or stuff like that, or
an ambulance chasing point.
Yeah, like
not
like,
to be a total dick, but
I mean, like yeah, like getting involved like on the back of mobilizing around like the current crisis or polycrises.
Mm-hmm. Which describes
some of y'all are having polycrisis out there, and you need to consider monogamy. You need to consider celibacy.
My whole life is a polycrisis.
Amen. Let's see.
Yeah. We were talking a little about... Oh, sorry.
No, yeah. I mean, one thing, too, I think you were saying when we were chatting about this earlier, is, like, that it's starting to feel like seasons are just super fucking arbitrary now because, you know, where we live, it's basically, like, winter and then it's 80 degrees for like it's pretty much 80 degrees from like mid-March till like late or till like early December, and then like you get like basically like a weird little horseshoe of freezing temperatures and stuff, and then you're back to that. So it's like seasons have become like a little less demarcated. I mean, part of me wonders is, like, has it always been like this? Or, like, do we just have a nostalgia for, like, the way that, like... Like, are we just living where my life functionally day to day just looks like shit, like no matter how the weather is outside. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like my day to day is like the same day because I'm an adult and I go to work and like in the city and stuff, and like weather is like incidental, but like, are we kind of like nostalgic for a time when like, the passage of time was so much more significant to us as like children in school or something, and that's how we remember seasons being so significant to us and like marking these like moments of change within ourselves and within our like immediate surroundings.
I would say that it has felt like things have gotten significantly more fucked up in the past 5 years, and I don't think my life has become like significantly more shitty.
It's just me.
No, I think that's actually an interesting point because, the daily grind, as it were, kind of like pulls you from those seasonal rhythms. You fucking sit under artificial lights if it's too, you get into work, if you get into work early, you turn on the lights. It's not like you just don't go to work because it's not light, and you go to work, it's dark, whatever. In winter, it might get fucked up because you go in when it's dark and then you leave when it's dark. But that's just kind of how it is. And there's this sort of enforced, almost biological stability to modern industrial or post-industrial life that breaks from any sense of seasonality, really.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, since I kind of moved out of, I mean, I guess I was in food service, but it was kind of agriculturally adjacent food service because of like the kind of product that I sold as a retail thing, a retail commodity. And you could kind of like notice seasons progressing in terms of like what became available and what wasn't available. And I mean, like, being a little more connected to that, I mean, like in my own personal life, like maintaining some connection to seasons and stuff is a thing that like I enjoy through gardening. But like, we can talk about that a little later because I think that kind of like big like movement of four seasons and stuff is also like kind of overly simplistic about how I personally think of like seasons and stuff.
Sure.
As I kind of like take on these like kind of closer relationship to I guess what learning like agriculture or whatever, or learning like my land, or forming a relationship with the natural world and stuff in a way that, I don't have on Microsoft Teams or something.
Yeah, no. I mean, definitely the idea of like there's a commodified view of each of the seasons. I'm not going to get into the whole like remember was it like 3, 4, 5 years ago when everybody like lost their shit making fun of people for like being, I love pumpkin spice lattes, they're back. But then, to some extent, there's a bit of a commodification of, your seasons, and this is holiday season, this is this season, this is summer, so you do this.
I don't
And
know
that
what
doesn't.
season it is until I see what shape the Reese's cups are at the time.
That feels like a Barbara Kruger poster or something.
It definitely is.
Definitely is.
I guess, yeah, I mean, like, what you're alluding to, of course, is the fact that, like, climate change seems to be, like, disrupting how we also experience seasons in the natural world in a lot of ways. And like, like, you don't even mean like super literally with like science and stuff, but like, you know, yeah, it's like, it definitely feels like, oh, I don't, I just straight up don't remember, like, not, you know, some are feeling quite 2 months longer on either side. And I've lived kind of in more or less the same bioregion or whatever for most of my life. So it's not like that has changed. I mean, it's like factually changing. I don't know. Should we do
Which
something about
is
that? Should anarchists do
horrifying,
something about
isn't
that? Let's get on that.
Maybe we should.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Like, I mean, like, I think that anarchists have a the idea of like responding to climate change is like, it's like such a big thing that like, I don't know that like response is the right way to go about it. Like the way we see it, and we see anarchists responding to crisis and disaster that is caused by climate change, right?
Right. And we see that as like this sort of almost safe. And I'm not denigrating anybody who's done this sort of thing. I've done this sort of thing. See, now I'm bragging. But I'm not denigrating. I'm not bragging. I do think, though, it is like this safe outlet, or maybe not outlet, but it is a safe sphere of anarchist activity. And that's fine that there's a safe sphere, but
When
I
you
don't
say
think.
safe, do you mean it's like it's a good PR move, right? Is what you mean?
Yeah, it's a good PR move that integrates reasonably well into already, at least in my experience, already existing, how do I say, like structures or like ways that are ways of doing politics or
Like
being that are
there's a like an
legible.
infrastructural progressive, like they're progressive or they are infrastructurally progressive things, like the groundwork has been laid by like probably some amount of aid organizations or like nonprofits and stuff that anarchists are just kind of stepping in to do more directly without like the kind of that as much, and vice versa sometimes is what maybe kind of you mean, or
Yeah, it dovetails with, and it dovetails with that. I think there's a lot of overlap between people in more like sort of rad lit, like liberal or how do you say, like services type, human services type work that can kind of pull into that. Again, I'm not denigrating that, but I do.
Yeah, I noticed you didn't call it Rad Lib. You almost did,
I
but.
don't even mean the people who are like going, oh, okay, we're gonna like do DIY disaster relief because the government isn't coming and we keep us safe. But that the scope of that is not going to be sufficient. Your distro will not be able to serve 1.8 billion climate change refugees by 2050. So, but as you say, everything like it is such a immense thing, and it's kind of intractable in a way for one person or one group of people. But there are definitely actions, and I don't know if we want to talk about this recent thing in Germany, but it seems like there are people who are taking some sorts of actions. I'm
Just
not sure if
taking an
that
amount of
was.
action against, yeah, climate change. I mean, the thing in Germany was, you know, like, it wasn't necessarily either two against, like, climate change. Like, they did that
That's
directly
true.
as a strike against, like, the military industrial kind of like it was a power, basically it was an intentional grid crashing outside of Berlin that like targeted a lot of residential area and like took the power out for, was it like 60 hours or something?
That's what they said.
Yeah, sounds about like 60 hours until everything got fully restored, which is pretty impressive. I mean, I remember like earlier this summer, like power went out in like my area for, just as a result of like storms and stuff, and like it was total chaos for people for like to have their power out for like more than like 12 hours or something, and like it caused like legitimate like need for like disaster relief on like some level in this city. So like, I mean, between like, yeah, like, I mean, like a lot of stuff like needed like a almost like a disaster relief level response. So like, a grid crash for like 60 hours is pretty significant. It's nothing to sneeze at. It's awesome. They were specifically targeting like two like tech companies and industrial manufacturers that they linked to the ongoing kind of military industrial complex's like relationship with aiding and abetting the genocide in Gaza and like other general like kind of military like kind of buildups and like militarism.
I mean, yes, they definitely state that, but they also have it as a, they also have in their statement. And I mean, I'm not gonna be like, oh no, it's totally about climate change. I'm just saying that that is one reaction that theoretically could be done towards companies or entity or infrastructure that drives climate change.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
But
there's like the idea of like a direct material sabotage.
I did want to read their statement, and hopefully I'm not like huffing into the microphone like some sort of creepy stalker in a giallo.
Oh yeah.
Like, just the end of it is, let's see. The reactionary wave of anti-feminism and hostility towards queer people is fueled by tech bros, and AI continues its meteoric rise, making the world increasingly artificial. Their dystopian promise of progress, a fascist-like technocracy with extraplanetary aspirations in response to the collapse of the planet. Everything seems to indicate that this world has been lost, that there is no possibility of action, that our actions are useless, as if the time of revolt belonged to a distant past. But today, not everything is working as smoothly as usual. And I'll just like I'll leave it at that, but
I liked
it's
that statement quite a bit. Like the whole thing is a really good read. It was posted to ANews, I think. Just was it recent? I know the act was on
It
September
was,
9th. I
it's
think
on
we lost it
Anarchist
because,
Federation. I
yeah, I think it's on Act for Freedom now too. But yeah, I mean, it happened on like basically like September 9th through the 11th or 12th or something in Berlin, and we were a little preoccupied in the United States with other things from September 10th or so onward. So but yeah, you can check that out. Kudos to some anarchists in Berlin for that one. But yeah, like, do you remember like a few years back when everyone was like concerned that there was like a grid crash scenario that someone tried to pull off in like North Carolina? And do you remember they were like, it's because there was a drag queen story hour. They're trying to grid crash the drag queens. That was so funny. I thought that was amazing.
Certainly. Well, I think there's often that sort of reaction. We've also, not like reaction, but like that sort of response to that level, a level of action that isn't within the fairly symbolic and within the fairly symbolic realm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like...
And... sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Like, I'm thinking there was also, like, that series of, like, industrial sabotages in France that now I'm completely blanking on the details of, like, a few years back.
They were but cool. Like, that's the details that they fucking owned.
They fucking ruled. But you will get some sort of response sometimes by like, oh well, this is wrong. This could endanger people, etc. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's also like a response to that level of action that is not simply within the symbolic, but is within some amount of like physical action against the things that we claim to be against. Yeah. And
I think anarchists are very quick to assume that like they are not behind like the thing that the optics of which like frighten the libs that they spend, not in the libs, I don't care about the libs, but like that, like frighten kind of the progressives that like anarchists seem constantly engaged in like a war to or in like a kind of like competition to like court the approval of in a lot of ways.
Right. There are two, well, there's one recent high profile event involving a conservative speaker. Where it interested me how very quickly, and look, I don't know if this guy who allegedly did it, like the whole thing seems fucking weird, and I don't fucking trust any amount of the official story on it, but it was interesting to me how fast people called it a false flag or just disavowed the idea that the I'm blanking on his name, like the alleged perpetrator could possibly have had politics that are even remotely similar to us.
Yeah.
And now I don't know if he was like, if it is the guy or whoever the guy is, or if it's not a guy. Yeah. I'll be
turns out, here. Turns out he's just kind of gay.
Right, but like people really, I saw a lot of people really seize on this idea that it was, and I mean, maybe it's just because it was an inherently funny prospect that it was some sort of inter-right wing infighting, but it felt very much like this attempt to quickly disavow, this is a false flag, this guy isn't one of us, this isn't one of us.
Yeah.
And I don't really have any comments on that. I don't think we should or need to own that action, but I think the quick impulse that I see to disavow that action or to condemn this as like, oh, well, this person put their, like, their friends, their network at risk, all these things. Like, it's interesting that that's some people's knee-jerk reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's interesting on a sort of broader level how
people were going ape shit trying to insist that like he's like, yeah, he's an anarchist, it's amazing. It's like it's always happens, and it's literally always someone who's it's just like always someone who's just like, I don't know, just like completely brain rotted and is just like, I'm just gonna fucking blow him away. Like, it's just what's gonna happen. Like,
I think that's the average American's politics, though, at this point. It's inscrutable.
That's pretty great. It's cool. yeah, I don't know. It's the constant fighting over whether Travis Bickle was an anarchist or not, and it disinterests me. I mean, not us talking about it, but like just the kind of the war of position to see if you know, which hot shot is going to, you know, vindicate or be one of us or something. Like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, there, I mean, there's like that, but I mean, even more actually in the anarchist movement and stuff. I mean, like anarchists taking on like these kind of like direct material actions and stuff, and like then being, you know, targeted by the state for it and stuff, and then very quickly disavowed by mass movement, kind of like activist progressive spaces and stuff, and like formations is, you know, Free Casey Goonan. That shit is fucking unconscionable. Very, like, our heart goes out to you, because that is, that is just a fucking nightmare. The optics obsessed kind of like space of like progressive, like what progressive anti-Zionism and stuff, to completely like focus their terrain on like fucking student encampments and like fucking like good victims or whatever, and not like someone who, you know, did what is pretty in line with like what a lot of like anarchist versions of like attack and sabotage look like. You know, like, I don't know, sometimes you have to wonder like what is the efficacy of like wanting to bring oneself, or like wanting to like put oneself in that space of like such a big tent with these people who are just like fucking snakes and stuff.
Right.
To like,
yeah.
Obviously, like, you know, that's not his fault or anyone's fault for doing that, but it's also just like these people are like disingenuous operators, that they are like the organizations and stuff that are so easily able to dispose like people who are willing to like strike out materially because it's actually like efficacious and stuff in some ways, and not like just entirely something that can like bolster like the career that they're going to turn into like a job with like Repair the World or something in like a year and a half or some bullshit.
Like, right.
I don't know.
No, I mean,
yeah, Free Casey.
Free Casey, I think this maybe dovetails a little with what I was saying earlier about how there are, whatever, we've said this a bunch of times, there are all sorts of like projects or things one gets involved with in with people who are much more like liberal, left of center, whatever. And what I find so distressing about the Casey Brennan thing, and about a lot of the other people who have been, who are not Mahmoud Khalil, I mean, not that like anybody didn't deserve the support and love that they did get if they got it.
Oh yeah, but I totally don't mean like Mahmoud Khalil at like Columbia and stuff. Like, right. Obviously, like someone who's like fucking, you know, basically just disappeared by the state a couple times now. And like stripped of their like kind of like legal status in any way. That's is something
terrifying in its own different way.
Yeah. No, but like, yeah, the amount of just like the amount of like I don't know. I mean, it's like, the amount of fucking like worry that people have over Jimmy fucking Kimmel and stuff. Jesus. It's crazy. I don't know. It's funny that, you know, did you know Charlie Kirk was the original Man Show Boy?
Really?
Yeah, and that's why Jimmy Kimmel shot him in the fucking neck. he was getting too big for his britches, and he fucking blew his shit away.
Yeah. of ik het was, die daar de nacht verstierde, aan de overkant van het water, dat kalm en donker tussen ons lag. Het kan zijn dat de gebouwen geen beletsel vormden, dat de trambaan met gemak genomen werd, dat al mijn activiteiten die nacht, als pijlen, als vuurwerk, de materie doorboorden. En jou uit je slaap hielden. Het kan zijn dat ik het was. Als ik er goed over nadenk, moet er nog veel meer tot stand zijn gebracht. Moet deze nacht tot in alle uithoeken gevolgen hebben gehad? Moet het antwoord zijn: ja, ik was het. Natuurlijk, ik was het. Die de wijzers alle kanten opjoeg. Een knetterende kortsluiting beetpakte. De zwaartekracht uit zijn functie ontsloeg. Ik was het die de grondvesten schudden deed. Ik was het die de aarde uit zijn vervelende baan heeft gestoten. De sterren van schrik verder schijnen liet. Ik was het die met een blauwdruk kwam voor een nieuw en verbeterd heelal. Thank you.